can tell I am nothing special. That is exactly why I was chosen to tell my story. There's another reason, but you'll have to wait a bit to learn about that.
It is easy for modern people to idealize the people of the Bible, but these ancient brothers and sisters had many of the same needs and wants as we do. If they didn't feel loved, they were lonely. If they worked hard, they got tired. If they didn't get food, they starved.
In my lifetime, we, Jews, were an interesting people. We were not exactly a distinct ethnic group, although most of us had common ancestors. What distinguished us was our desire to follow the laws of Moses. To do this, you had to be born a Jew, or be accepted in a ceremony by the Jewish leaders. If you were a man, that ceremony included being circumcised. Our dedication to the laws of Moses is what set us apart from all other people. To non-Jews, we were all lumped into one category, Jews. Inside of the Jewish community, we had so many distinctions that we didn't even bother to count them. Where there are two Jews, there are three opinions. Even in my time, we had that saying. We had the obvious distinctions like country of origin, original tribe of Israel, which part of Israel you came from, language, looks, rich or poor, and countless other physical distinctions. Your New Testament talks about two religious and political factions, the Pharisees and the Sadducees. Your historians know of two others, the Essenes and the Zealots. But there were many other small factions that had their own opinions on how to deal with the intricacies of the laws of Moses, how to live under Roman rule, and how to improve our economy. When we Christians arrived on the scene, we could have been just another internal faction to throw into the mix. Our teachings on the Messiah didn't really cause a big stir in the general population, because other groups had their ideas about the Messiah too. All Jews wanted a Messiah to deliver them from the harsh Roman rule. There were two things about the Christians that the Jewish leaders could not allow to exist. First, early on, the Christians continued to accuse the Jewish leaders of murdering an innocent man. Obviously, they did not want that teaching to continue because it undermined their authority. Second, and most important, the Christians insisted that Jesus was God and that he had fulfilled the law of Moses. If that were true, the leaders lost all of their authority and income. The entire social structure of worshiping at the temple was finished. If that were not true, the Christians were blasphemers and needed to be extinguished. And the leaders kept their high places. As you know, they decided that the claims of the Christians were not true. However, that put the leaders in a quandary. They could threaten the Christians within certain limits, but we were still part of the Jewish community and could not be entirely excluded as long as we also followed the laws of Moses. It put us into a quandary too. We wanted access to the temple and the Jewish people, and we wanted to keep following the laws of Moses because that did not generally conflict with being Christians. The solution that worked for both the Jewish leaders and for us was for us to separate into our own little social groups, which we called churches. We met regularly to worship God in our own way, and we slowly started separating and distinguishing ourselves more and more. We became known as members of the Way. We Christians started separating ourselves from the rest of the Jews by taking care of ourselves financially. We shared our goods among ourselves, so everyone had enough. Sometimes our wealthier members sold their own property to provide extra. The widows among us had to be taken care of just as they always had been taken care of by the Jewish social system. That is when we found out that we had distinctions even within the way. Apparently, the widows that were not of Israeli roots thought that they were being treated less generously than the Israeli widows. In order to handle this problem, as well as many other daily issues, the apostles had the church choose 7 men of good reputation and full of the Holy Spirit and wisdom to take care of such things. We later became known as deacons, a word meaning servant or minister. Stephen and Philip were the most famous of the original 7 deacons. I was one of the other 5. I was nothing special, except that I had a good reputation and was full of the Holy Spirit. I had no special skills, was not a good businessman, didn't have any money, and wasn't very good looking. All in all, I was as ordinary a person as you could find. Perhaps you think of yourself as ordinary too. What made me a little different was my willingness to serve without recognition. Perhaps you have that willingness. I would serve as a deacon for the next 40 years and would be the only original deacon serving in the Jerusalem church when it was forcibly dispersed in 70 AD. That is a long time to serve without recognition from anyone but God. That was good enough for me, and perhaps that's good enough for you. But I didn't get chosen to tell you my story because it is about me. I got chosen because I am the most qualified person to tell you about part of the book of James. James saw the development of our church from his point of view as a leader. But I saw it from the point of view as someone who was just trying to keep the wheels turning. Or more accurately, just trying to keep the wheels on every day. It's one thing for James to tell me our God will provide, but it's another thing entirely for me to go that same afternoon to a widow who is starving and tell her that I have no bread to give her. But I'm getting ahead of myself. So, early Christians were also Jews. As the friction grew between us and the Jewish leaders, we began to be excluded from their social system. It wasn't long before they began an active persecution of us, even to the point of physical harm. After Stephen's death, a man named Saul began a deadly extermination of Christians in Jerusalem and threatened to go elsewhere to do the same. For their own safety, and in an effort to begin evangelizing other villages and cities, many of the Christians began leaving Jerusalem. Eventually, all of the apostles left. So James became the undisputed leader of our dwindling group of Christians. That wasn't the big challenge. The big challenge was that the Christians that moved away tended to be better off economically than those who remained. Every year, our church in Jerusalem became poorer and poorer. As the deacon in charge of helping the poor, I found that we had so many more requests for help than we had resources to share. You never saw so many widows and orphans as at one of our Sunday services. We were so economically fragile. When a famine anywhere hit, and food prices rose, it was a huge crisis for us. Such a famine hit the empire during the reign of Claudius. A little over 15 years after the church started, we Christians in Jerusalem were literally starving to death. We had no one to turn to because we were at such odds with the Jewish leaders. Then, God raised up a man that would soon change the course of Christianity. Paul. Saul, the persecutor of Jerusalem Christians, transformed into Paul, the Jerusalem Christian defender. Along with Barnabas, he helped raise the first relief fund for us from Christians in Antioch. You cannot imagine how much we praised God for him providing for us through Paul and Barnabas. That was not the last relief fund Paul raised for us either. Talk about faith in action. He was as much of a hero to us as any Old Testament figure that had saved the Jews. Paul taught us that community wasn't just among the members of one church, but community is among churches throughout God's kingdom. God's community is worldwide, and Christians are to take care of each other, regardless of their location. James not only was a shepherd over these people who stayed in Jerusalem, but he continued to be concerned about all those who left Jerusalem. Clearly, James had to rely on the Holy Spirit to lead him because James had not been outside of Israel and had little personal experience with Gentiles and foreign governments. The Christians had to take care of each other because nobody else was there to help. Now that you have this bit of historical background, perhaps you can better understand why James wrote these verses. Let the brother in humble circumstances rejoice in his high position. That doesn't sound much like what is considered high in your society, but it wasn't considered high in my society either. James was trying to teach us a new way of thinking, a new way of thinking that would even impact the way we thought. If any man among you seems to be religious and doesn't control his tongue, but deceives his own heart, this man's religion is worthless. Pure religion and faultless before God and the Father is this: to visit the orphans and widows in their distress and keep unblemished by the world. This next quotation from James is perhaps his most controversial, but maybe it won't be for you, now that you've heard my story. What good is it, my brothers, if a man says he has faith and has not works? Can faith save him? If a brother or sister is naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you says to them, "Leave in peace, be warmed and filled with food," but do not give them those needed things, what good is it? Even so, faith, if it has not works, is dead being alone. Yes, a man may say, "You have faith and I have works." Show me your faith without your works, and I will show you my faith by my works. And to show you how much wisdom James can pack into a couple of sentences, who is wise and knowledgeable among you? Let them show it by good conversation and works done in humility and wisdom. What are works? I'm not much of a theologian, but here's my definition: just keeping the wheels on every day. Nothing special.